As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
This very special episode of Imprint Companion, or Serious Disc Agreement, wherever you're listening, is brought to us today by Dendy Cinemas. From November 18 to 30, if you're in Sydney, there is a Denny Villeneuve retrospective to celebrate the release of Dune on December 2nd. So, 9 titles that I, for one, am going to at least 3. They are Maelstrom, Polytechnique, Incendies, Prisoners, Enemy, Sicario, Arrival, and Blade Runner 2049. Tickets are on sale at dendy.com.au or at the Newtown box office. I hope to see you there. And also, August 32nd on Earth, one of his original films. There's 2 or 3 in there that I need to get my butt in the seat to see in a cinema. But now, let's get on to the show.
Think something new under sun. You can't take back
Hello and welcome to the Imprint Companion, the podcast that discusses all of the releases from Imprint Films, a beautiful boutique Blu-ray label located here in sunny Australia, one of the most gorgeous countries on the planet Earth. My name is Alexi Toliopoulos, and joining me as always is my brother in physical media arms. It is Blake Howard. How are you doing, my dearest friend?
Oh, baby, I'm so good. It feels like such an incredibly long time between us chatting. We chat almost every day on text messages. And but to be here, I think maybe we were holding off on this chat because it is just the most drastically intimidating chat to recommend what I think we're both in agreement is maybe the best physical media release we've seen in the last couple of years. So I'm so excited to talk to you about this. Imprint, we've gushed about a few big releases from Imprint this year, but when we even saw that this was coming, I think we were knocked sideways. And
I'm going to use a word I rarely use. When I saw that little picky come up on my screen announcing that there was going to be this Zhang Yimou Gong Li collaborations box set, I will use the word flabbergasted, because I was. I couldn't believe that someone even thought to make this as a box set and then would have the ability to get all the films, put it together, compile it with beautiful special features, and put it out. And we've got it in our hot hands. We've been making our way through it.
It's an intimidating box. It's immense.
It's immense. It's intimidating. I think partly because Zhang Yimou, most of the movies I've seen of his are not featured in this box set at all. I'm talking about Hero, which was a huge movie for me in high school. And so most of the films I've seen of Zhang Yimou are in that wuxia genre of films of martial arts, ancient Chinese, martial arts and sword fighting, semi-fantasy type movies. So getting into these more historical and naturalistic movies that are not even naturalistic. They run the gamut of everything, these films. This saga that he did with Gong Li, his creative partner and former life partner as well. Weird to say former life partner. You know, they just used to be a couple, is what I was trying to say.
Yeah, kind of muse. And I think what we want to just say is the idea of collaborations is maybe the greatest campfire bullshit conversation for physical media heads ever. It's
absolutely.
We always talk about this shit. Alex and I have definitely talked about it. I'm sure that if you listen to this show, you know that Everyone and their dog has always said, could we imagine a world, and this is one of the most famous ones, could we imagine a world where there was a true collaborations box set of, say, Scorsese and De Niro? Could you imagine what such a thing could be to look like that, where there's like a true collaboration that runs over? The other one, the big one that's missing.
Of
could
course,
you imagine?
The big one is, of course, Johnny Depp and Tim Burton.
No.
It would look like a creepy pop-up book.
I was going to say, Peter Berg and Marky Mark, Spencer Confidential right at the top.
Yeah.
It could be Michael Bay and Marky Mark. You never know.
You never know.
But no, all joking aside, there are these relationships that happen with actors and directors, and obviously Zhang Yimou and Gong Li have a more unique relationship as a muse and filmmaker and artist, composer, or whatever you want to call him, than others. But when this came out, we were just knocked for six. So many exciting movies, so many things I had never seen before. And so maybe we're going to jump all over the map. The actual whole collection is Red Sorghum, Judo, Raise the Red Lantern, The Story of Kui Zhu, To Live, Shanghai Triad, Curse of the Golden Flower, and Coming Home. We are not going to do our regular deep dives on all of the films. We're going to pick four because it's so immense. And we do not want to do it an injustice, this entire box set. Suffice to say, though, it's essential. You don't have to listen to one more second of this pod other than, this is an essential purchase. You must own it. And of everything that Imprint has brought out, this is their most important and best release.
Absolutely, unequivocally, I agree with everything Blake just said wholeheartedly. I would also say in Australia, if an Australian physical media collector listening to this, this will be available in all the JB Hi-Fi 20% off, 30% off sales. I think there might even be currently one on at the moment. And I would say that this is a great gift for oneself to fully begin that journey of discovery into world cinema. This was a big blind spot for me, this collaboration box set. But also, if there's a cinephile in your life, this is the most hectic Xmas present that you could ever wrap up and chuck under a tree. Like, this will be so special for a young cinephile to open on Christmas morning, open that red and green wrapping paper to find this beautiful cubic red box full of incredible films. I would say this is one of the text messages I said to Blake was, out of the four films that I've seen in this box set so far, two of them are the best films I've ever seen in my entire life. I'm being slightly hyperbolic, but only slightly. Like, two of them are within the realm of 100 best films I've ever seen.
Lex's text messages sometimes come in after I've gone to bed. So when I wake up, like, I just see them and the hyperbole strikes me like an alarm clock. Like, I wake up like a bolt. Holy shit. What movie was this? So look, I'm thrilled and excited to talk with you about these today. Let's maybe kick off with you're going to tackle for our lovely listeners, Raise the Red Lantern and To Live, and I'm going to tackle Judo and Red Sorghum. But let's kick off with, I guess, probably one of his most well-known films outside of that sort of Wuxia stuff. It's a 1991 film, and it's called Raise the Red Lantern.
This is probably the film, Blake, that I was most familiar with in this box set. It is one of those films that probably gets mentioned in those, like, 1001 movies you must see before you die. I would say outside of, like, the Wuxia hits, it is probably Zhang Yimou's most well-known film. It is a historical film. I'll read you the blurb from the back here. China, 1920, one master, four wives. Raise the Red Lantern. After her father's death, 19-year-old Song Lian is forced to marry the much older lord of a powerful family. With three wives already, each living in a separate house within the great castle, he is a fierce competition for his attention and the privileges that are gained. This is one of those films that I would say so uniquely captures something that I don't know about at all. Like, I don't really know too much about the world of concubines and in, like, historical China. But I would say the thing that really hits me about this film is the way that it builds from something that feels so small and intimate, like the relationships between all of these characters. But then it kind of builds and grows to something that feels gargantuan and almost epic in its scale. Even though it is just like one small little compound, really, where there are four houses, with each one being like the home and bed of a bedroom of a concubine, and then you've got all the servants working around them and stuff. And there's all these conflicts and that just stew and stir and boil over. And then there's this breaking point where there's just no turning back from in this film that left me floored. I really do say, Blake, that this is one of the very best films I've ever seen in my entire life.
I mean, it's a film that, for me, after you sent me that text, I watched it and I couldn't believe, like, some movies cheat their stakes. You know what I'm saying? I think when you're watching a movie, sometimes you're like, is this going to go as far as you think it can go and be as, you know, true to the bleak emotional sort of spectrum of this movie? And it's truly one of those ones, and if you haven't seen it, I won't spoil it, but I'll just say that, like, the ending, not only does it stick, it hits you with such a force that you're, I don't know, it's almost, it's got like notes of Chinatown where you've got this incredible piece of work and then you've got like Polanski go, no, let's just make the ending even more fucked up and bleak. Like, it's like the ending exists and you're like, how do we make this so resonant and so push you over the top? And I just think it's a stunning, like, I mean, we are not hyperbolic in to say, like, Zhang Yimou's visual sensibility is simply stunning on any scale, seemingly with any film stock, good or bad.
Yeah.
But Razor Red Lantern particularly has a little bit more money behind it. It looks luscious. It gets into the headspace of these people and these motivations. And I love what you said, boil overs, because it just feels like this is a repeat. So it's just boil over after boil over. But yeah, no, it's truly a profound movie. And Gong Li, I mean, just wow. Just wow in this movie. She's just, I mean, again,
the levels that she plays, like the range in one character that she is able to play the full spectrum of notes in her range is something just so phenomenal. Like, this is the performance that probably hit me the hardest as well in the collaborations box set from her, because it is everything. It's quiet, it's vigilant, it's cunning, yet it is also go with the flow at points. And it just runs the gamut of, like, what an incredible performer can really do with a single character, and while retaining that character, never feeling like there's a false moment in the way that they inhabit and the way they embody that character. I think that this is the key film where it is truly a collaboration between two artists coming together to use their entire skill, every skill that they have together to create something really impressive and really holistic. And I think the key thing that I've learned about Zhang Yimou while going through this box set is they are truly a master of perspective, whether it be the perspective of a character and how they see the world, or the perspective of kind of like, these films are basically about humans in their relation to a broader and bigger history and how the individual falls into a larger collective history. And literally in some of these films where we talk about collectivism and communism stuff later on. But I think they're largely films about the individual in the wake and awe of epic history surrounding them. And that in this film takes shape in the literal camera work being very wide. The wide shots in this film are sensational. These painted vistas almost of singular rooms, where it's like one held off long take, usually big wide shot where we see the encompassing room and then the players within it, it creates these feelings of like these closed off spaces and being trapped in a way that is so elegant without it like being hitting you over the head in any kind of way. I think, I don't know, man. I'm just so in awe of this film. I can't believe it.
It's really terrific. The whole Collaborations box set has a phenomenal series of essays by Ying Zhu, who's a professor of cinema studies in New York. And so there's definitely more stuff for you to dive into about that. But actually, on the disc itself, film historian Tony Rayens has a little bit of a docker about it. This is from a 2K scan. It's really spectacular. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to jump from this one. This is a 1994 film. I'm going to jump back to Red Sorghum, which is a 1987 flick, which is one of their first and the first cab off the rank in this Collaborations box set.
It is the debut of both of them. Gong Li's first film as an actor and Zhang Yimou's directorial debut.
Absolutely. And so this is also set, so similarly set kind of 20s, 30s China. And basically there's a winery owner who's leprous and he purchases the right for a young bride played by Gong Li, and she goes to his arranged marriage. When she goes there, she meets this. There's a Chinese wedding custom that they do this big drumming and performance to get the new bride to this man. Anyway, the leprous owner dies, and so she takes over his wine plantation, and one of these celebratory dances kind of takes her, and the whole story is sort of beautifully told from this detached perspective of this grandson character about these are my grandparents. And the customs are crude and old, but they're looked on with such sympathetic and beautiful eyes. And some of the actions of the characters to a certain point are very crude and of previous times, especially the way that men treat women and the way that women are sort of positioned in society. But also it's something that connects the different Chinese-Japanese war towards the end of the film. And you sort of see this, incredible clash of cultures and clash of times. It almost feels like it leaps forward in time. And I mean, the movie's called Red Sorghum, which is a berry that they make the wine out of at this distillery in China. And the color in this film is one of the most stunning things I've ever seen. Like the spectrum of color, the characters. Gong Li is still absolutely finding her feet as an actor in this movie, which is so great because after then diving into To Live and going to Raise a Red Lantern, like you can just see how quick she's been able to move up. But one thing you can see here, you can see this absolutely buoyant and attractive person who's got this magnetism when they're like smiling, when they're happy. And you can also see this like toughness. And yeah, this is a, Red Sorghum is a beautiful and poetic and kind of, I don't know, brutal movie. It feels all the ways that, and even to like these transcendent depths that you kind of never imagine it's going to go to. All the ways it kind of feels a little bit Days of Heaven-y to me. You know, that there's just something. It's so lyrical and poetic, and bad things are happening, but it seems to just be told with this sympathy. Really special one.
Think what I really liked about it is exactly what you're saying. Like, there is this quality to the narration being from the perspective of the future grandchild of the characters in this that gives it this beautiful fairy tale like quality. Like, there's a kindness in the narration and the storytelling, literally the storytelling of it being told from the grandchild, that allows like the brutalness to take on like this far away feeling of it being like a fairy tale of something that's been told over and over again to someone to the point where it's not real. It's a recounted thing. And I think that is something very, very clever that I've not encountered before in a way that is so sweet and tender, while the things that we're seeing on screen can be horrible things happening to people.
As far away from sweet and tender as you could possibly imagine. But it just, yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, and that great documentary on the recent Days of Heaven release from Imprint told us was just like, isn't it magic what you can find in a narration? And I would just wonder if Zhang was thinking when he was conceiving of this about like, if I can say it in this sympathetic voice, then maybe I can really smash people with the content and have this really beautiful conflicting experience as it works through. But no, it's another special one in this box that just like knocked me for six. And I was,
I would also say this being the first film, we start to see like the ideas of perspective coming up and like people in history. But also one of the other things I didn't expect that I think evolves so much over the coming films is the humor. Like there's a lot of funny stuff even in the story of this, like plotting wise that are funny in this film. Like there's a kind of like almost... a deus ex machina involving urine in this, which is incredible.
Yes. And just I can't... the deus ex machina involving urine, that's just so perfect.
I mean, that's what it is.
That's exactly what it is. It's the best thing ever. Let's dive into... maybe... Actually, no, we'll save the very best for last with To Live. I want to jump into Judo... which is a 1990 film. And this one from Zhang is about a woman married to this brutal... Again, it's all of these are set in different periods of Chinese history. But this one, another woman is sort of married off to a brutal but infertile owner in rural China. And she has an affair with her new husband's nephew and conceives a child. And what happens is, rather than what you would expect, which is, you know, that this brutal, you know, they backstab this brutal owner to watch that he, you know, his eventual demise or something like that. What happens is watching these three people have to come to terms with the truth of this and what mercies they give each other and what lies they're willing to... accepting their lives and live out in their lives in order to save face in the community and to maintain this, you know, perception of lineage. And what I found about it, again, like these tales of being shackled and having your destiny told out for you and then doing whatever you can to sort of quietly rebel within the scope of the system, the way that it allows you. All these themes are things that come up in Zhang Yimou's work over and again. So it's interesting to see the evolution here. But Judo just felt like this, almost like Mikhail Haneke kind of movie where like someone thinks they're doing something right and it ends up like crippling them, and someone thinks that they're doing something good or he just has this way, in the same way he did with Red Sorghum, to like completely flip your perceptions of a character in just like a half second, and with just an action. And you know, this packs a punch. It's a lean, mean little movie. It's only an hour and 35 minutes, like a very quick sort of 90-minute watch. But again, stunning colors because it's a, you know, he's a dye mill. So there's these beautiful, like wet, beautiful streaming colors all throughout the thing. And again, so very beautiful. But I'm struck just by the... he loves playing with like Murphy's Law. Like what is the... you know, what is the thing that you could just possibly not want to happen in this situation?
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Yeah. And the worst possible outcome, and he just plays with it, and so it's just like, again, over and over, fate kicking you in the teeth in judo, and it's it's a really grueling and tough watch because of the emotional roller coaster it puts you on. But that's nothing to say against the talent of the way that the film is made. More that it is just so ferociously made to just eat you inside while you're watching it. Really terrific.
I can't wait to watch it. That's one that I haven't been able to get onto yet. So I think it's been shot off the list to the next one I'm going to chuck on. There was one other one that I watched, Blake, that I don't think you had time to, that I want to give a quick little shout out to, which is Shanghai Triad, which is for almost a decade was the last film Gong Li and Zhang Yimou ever collaborated on, until coming back with a couple more in the last few years. But this was the one that they made right after To Live, and it was hoped to be a more mainstream movie that would play in China. It's a gangster movie set in the 1930s, where country boy is brought to 1930s Shanghai by his uncle, who wants the boy to become a member of the powerful gang ruled by the manipulative Tang. When the boy's uncle and the gang's several other members die during a rival gang's unsuccessful attempt on Tang's life, the latter retreats to a remote small island thinking of revenge. This is a really interesting film because it all is, like we were saying, perspective-based. It's based on the perspective of this 14-year-old boy who is kind of seeing through glimpses some of the violence of the triads, like through slatted windows at some points, or coming in just after there has been bloodshed. So it's really an interesting, like, you know me, I love my gangster movies. So to see one that is almost like 7 days in the perspective of the young boy from Road to Perdition that catches a glimpse of his father's violence, it's almost like that stretched out to a whole movie. And Gong Li plays like a cabaret singer who is, a gangster's mole, basically. And it is a beautiful film. The perspective of the film being from almost like a passive character who has to become active is really interesting. And it's another one that's like a small winner. Like, it's a really, really cool film. Especially if, like me, you like your gangster films. This is something that you would never have seen before, basically.
So, if you just said the magic phrase of what is easily the best film from Sam Mendes, which is Road to Perdition, and that perspective of his young son, Tyler Hoechlin, who's now playing Superman with Tom Hanks.
I love Tyler Hoechlin.
I love that movie, and again, just more and more that we talk about it, it's just that manipulation of these sympathetic perspectives, no matter what we're watching, and playing with your emotions is just like what this master does best. But let's get to the movie that you said. So, guys, you would have heard us. We're now into Imprint 71. So we've done every single Imprint release. This release takes us up to Imprint 74. We're going to dive into the Big British Collection is the next series that we're going to be covering on Imprint Companion. But Lex is like, Blake, after these 71 movies, this may be one of the best movies I've ever seen in my life, and maybe and easily one of the best movies in this entire collection.
Straight
let's
up.
Let's talk about To Live.
This knocked me away. This is one of the most impressive films I've ever seen in my entire life. This is for me, the best film in this box set, and I'd never even heard of it before. It is the best film in all of Imprint releases so far. It is a 30-year family saga that is the complete and utter encapsulation of what I was talking about when it comes to perspective and when it comes to human stories of the individual scale, held up against the background of the historical context that they live in and where they fall into that. And this is a film that is so much about the individual within the collective. And when we talk about collective, I'm talking about collectivism. I'm talking about the ideals of communism and stuff. This is set over 30 years of Chinese history, and it is told from the perspective of a couple. I'm just going to read you the blurb from the back. Fuki and Jizhen endure tumultuous events in China as their personal fortunes move from wealthy land ownership to peasantry. Addicted to gambling, Fu Gi loses everything. In the years that follow, he is pressed into both the nationalist and communist armies, while Zhao Zhen is forced into menial work. And that is so simply put to what this film is. This takes place over three decades of Chinese history, from the 1930s to the 1960s. And what To Live begins as, like, it begins before the Civil War, which is when the nationals are versing the communists during the revolution. And so we see them begin their lives in, like, living in a mansion, and Fugi loses everything to gambling. And I thought this movie was going to be, like, about that, about gambling. And then it becomes about world history in a way that I've never confronted before. And it comes about so much different things, like artistry, and it's held together so beautifully by these two performances from Gong Li as the wife in this partnership, and Ji Yu as Fu Gi, this man whose, like, life is torn apart by gambling and then repaired and torn apart again by communism in his country. And so we see him basically switch sides in the war as that comes into. And then they have the good fortune of when we have the communist revolution, that because they are no longer the landlords and, like, the upper crust, they are, like, the lowest rung of peasantry. They are, like, able to survive and thrive in communism because it's, like, all these twists of fate that are so elegantly done. It takes us all the way through the Cultural Revolution and everything. Oh my God, Blake, this is one of the greatest sagas I've ever seen, and so complex, yet it's portrayed in so simple to understand language of it being like a story of a family unit that starts as two people, becomes four people, and it stays as four people in different combinations as the film continues on. Basically, actually, oh my God, that's what I would say. This is a film about a family unit of four people, but the four people in that family unit continues to change.
Yeah, and I think what you nailed so perfectly is, like, twists of fate and human scale. Like, so in these huge tumultuous events, really great epics just do the smartest thing. They make the smartest choice, which is if you focus it on the people and the individuals in the epic and you don't get lost, you still, like, chart their emotional and, you know, physical and life trajectory against the events. And it just, there's a delicacy that it's not on the nose, you know, like so many films sometimes when they're going through these tumultuous events, it just doesn't work because you're like, this is so glib, you're just, everything feels like it's so forced. But exactly as you said, particularly Fugi's character around his internal conflict and switching sides and trying to be in some ways be opportunistic, as, you know, he's a gambler, so making literally an ideological gamble. And then that has a good fortune turn. It's like, there's just some really smart, both, like, things that are in the text and then this, you know, concurrent meta text that's happening with the movie and everything that's happening. That's just like, I think you just nailed it. It just nails the twists of fate, and it stays at the human scale. And it's just really, you know, it's like, it's a
one of the great epics. Like, it's a great epic. Like, it's like one of the
great epic.
It's just one of the great epics. It sits up there with, like, you could totally watch To Live and watch Lawrence of Arabia. Like, it makes enough sense to watch them both together.
You know, yeah, you know, or Godfather, because it's like that saga of one family. Like,
one family.
Ah, God, this is one of my favorite films in my entire life. I could watch it again right now. And it's not like the way that some epics can feel like a drag at some points. Yeah. You know, the common like criticism of like The Godfather and like Lawrence of Arabia, like their films that insist upon themselves. To quote Peter Griffin from the Family Guy TV show. But this is so intimate and so layered and so textured. Like, there's so many different textures and tones coming through this movie. Like, there are moments that are like funny. There are moments that are heartfelt excitement. There are moments where there's some of the saddest stuff that I've ever felt while watching a movie. And there are moments that are just like weird and fun. Like, so much of this movie is about the main character, Fugui, becoming a shadow puppet. Like a shadow puppet, I guess, entertainer. And he's like an opera singer that like sings during the shadow puppets. And like, he provides like the entertainment for the people that are around him. And like, those are like vastly entertaining little slices of life every single time, of what life used to be like and what entertainment used to be like. And everything about this film is so beautifully and perfectly written. Like, I would probably put this up there as a perfect movie, where the screenplay is perfect, the performances are all perfect, and it all is perfectly executed, where it just works perfectly. Like, if someone told you this as a story, you'd be like, you thought about every single little part and it all connected together in a way that is so wonderfully thought out, and it doesn't feel overly complicated or overly written in any kind of way.
Yeah, it's... You know, this is 1994. He's been making films with Gong Li since 1987. And so these 7 years and quite prolific, you know, clip of films just coming out and out and out and out. And it just feels like these themes, these twists of fate, these tales of family, these stories of human scale. And like, just again, especially that starts out right from Red Sorghum of like, there are greater, you know, transnational forces that are going to influence things that are happening in your life. But man, like, this is the movie where everything absolutely clicks. Like, everything just clicks right into place. And because I know that if our friend Maria Lewis ever listened to this, she'd hate this, I'm going to say it. It's like, this is Zhang Yimou's Heat. Like Michael Mann, you know, like, he finally...
She would absolutely hate this.
She'd hate that, you know? She'd hate it. And I'm said it basically just in case she listens. But what I would say is, in all seriousness, that's what it is. It's like someone who has had, like, a thematic preoccupation, and all of the films in those different ways have been toying with perspective, toying with those things, and this is the one where it's just, like, everything is so, like, within an inch of its life, modulated to make you feel this incredible roller coaster of life. And like, I think it's such a ballsy thing to name your movie To Live, by the way, because like there's a bit of a weight on, oh, To Live, like, you're gonna actually tell me something that's as epic as anything that could capture the essence of what life is. And it's like, one of the greatest credits is like, no, like, it absolutely earns its title. Like, it's like, To Live, yeah, that's what it is, To Live.
This is one of the best films about life that's ever lived. And I would say as well, like, Gi Yu and Gong Li as the two leads, this couple at the center of the film, through performance, because there's almost very little like true makeup enhancement to show the 30 years that they live through. There is some, but not like drastic. Like, they're not lathering on like prosthetic makeup to age them up. But they inhabit these characters for what truly feels like 30 years, not two and a bit hours. It feels like 30 years that they are these characters, and you feel them age, you feel them mature in really interesting ways that is what is probably the thing that will excite me most going back to the film, is just seeing how those performances mature from like a young couple in love starting their life together, and like the tumultuous relationship as it begins, to being this beautiful relationship of two people that are like, their life is to live together, you know, like, oh man.
And you have to, that's what's so great about like young love is so, as portrayed in the film, young love is that like, it's intense, and it's, and basically it's like love with blinders on. And what's great is that like, as their love endures, they're seeing actually who they are.
Yeah.
And they still, well, she still loves him, even though he's just like, he's just like a real, he's a real rapscallion of a guy. Yeah. Like, he's, sometimes he makes himself really hard to love in this movie. And the fact that their connection stays so strong is just, yeah, special. Mm. Special. And
it's a really, really special film.
That's literally five. There are eight films in this box set. Still more that we could have covered. But it's, I mean, it's as special as it gets.
I'm so glad we haven't, because as I was digging more into this box set, I knew that we had a purpose, that we had to review this and tell people about it. But I got to the point where I'm like, I can't run out of these movies. I want to be able to continue on watching these at a pace rather than like smashing through them. And yes. I think one of the great things about this box set is there is this running special feature between all of them with film historian Tony Raines, who is an expert on Zhang Yimou and the historical context of each of these films in when they were released and what they're about. And each one of those was what you would want to be a companion to any box set following the career of a single filmmaker and a great collaborator. It is... just, they got the exact right person who had everything that they needed to say about these films. And I'd highly recommend, after you watch one of these films, chuck on that Tony Raines discussion afterwards. They're really fantastic.
Yeah, it's all very good. And especially being so green to the historical context, because, you know, unless you're an expert on sort of Southeast Asian history over the last, you know, couple of hundred years, it's hard to sort of get a handle on it all. But, yeah, terrific. The essays are wonderful. We love it. We love a box that has an essay booklet. It's one of the rare ones here, and it's just stunning. And yeah, it's also got Chris Berry, who's a professor of film studies in King's College in London, does some essays as well. So yeah, it's just, you know, a couple of really terrific companion pieces to this. But I mean, you got to buy it, you got to own it, and you know, as Lex said, make that little cinephile in your life lose their flipping mind when you drop this cube of brilliance on them.
Yeah.
If we could speak from our own past selves, if this was, I mean, I know my Auntie Marcia used to love that, you know, $20 note in the card. But if Auntie Marcia ever dropped collaborations on young Blake, I mean, we would have, who knows? The sky was the limit. The sky was the limit at 18. So
exactly.
There's no limit. Get your physical media nerds. Get them started early. Drop a collaborations box set on it.
And I would say every single one of these films, from what I can see at least and from memory, none of them are on any kind of streaming or even iTunes, Google, like watch rent. So you got to buy a box to watch them all. I'm so glad I've got it, because this is, dare I say, could be the release of the year as far as those big box sets go.
I'm going out there and I'm saying it is. It's the release of the year for, it's the release of the year for what it does to actually honor a true and wonderful and unique collaboration, to bring all of these things together, to get restored 2K scans where possible, to get the very best scans that still exist. You know, a bit of behind the scenes, I know that the Red Sorghum scan, we've heard from our lovely friends at Imprint from behind the scenes, said that there's just no better print they could find in the world to get that to Blu-ray, and maybe that it doesn't look just as precise as some of the others, but they
still looks great.
I mean, look, that's what I said. I said it looks magnificent. However, you know, I think that that's the other massive curation thing, because the last thing you want is any of these things to get lost to time. These great entries that just sort of disappear, and then 100 years later, someone finds a print in a bloody library somewhere in Europe. But I love this, and yeah, really looking forward to hearing more of you guys. If you guys want to get in touch with us at One Blake Minute, at OHM Pods, at This Is Alexi, just you know, hashtagging collaborations. We'd love to hear what your faves were if you've had the same experience getting on with it. But lots of good tweets out there online of people around the world collecting it and being so grateful to finally have it in their possession. So it's awesome to talk to you about it, my friend.
Likewise. I'm so glad we finally got to talk about it, Blake.
So before we wrap up, Lex, firstly, you're all over the place at Sydney Film Festival right now. How's Sydney Film Festival treating you? Loving movies, physical media, now getting back to the big screen in Sydney.
Yes, back to the physical world beyond physical media. You know, I'll be honest, if the listeners of this show, there were points during this Sydney lockdown where I could not watch movies. I was sick of them. I didn't know what to do. I hit the real low depths of my mental health as far as it came to watching movies and also in general. But getting back out into the world again, enjoying Sydney Film Festival and cinema has been a lifesaver and has refilled my absolute passion for cinema and my passion for discovery and sharing the discoveries that I find. I would give a shout out to El Planeta, which I believe will have one more screening by the time this comes out in Sydney Film Festival. It is a really fantastic small Spanish language directorial debut that is funny, it's weird, it's beautiful, stunning black and white cinematography that captures like this seaside urban landscape so powerfully. And it is one of my favorite kinds of movies. It's a mother and daughter film about their bond and the complications of those kind of familial relationships. That's my discovery, I would say, of the festival so far.
Well, if I don't get to catch that, I'm looking out for the physical media of that one. We'll have to do a bit of an inventory chat about those things. Also, Total Reboot with a new series announcement. Would you like to tell the listeners?
Oh, yeah. The next thing that we're doing, Cam and I, we're doing a little trilogy to wrap up this month of November. We are doing a trilogy of romantic comedy starring Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore. Something that I think we've wanted to do since we started podcasting together like 6 years ago.
I mean, excellent. Phenomenal choice. Mm-hmm. Cannot wait. Just, you know, look, very special. We're the list is speaking as a listener and your friend, I'm excited. And guys, Miami Nice is coming at you thick and fast. Obviously, Serious Disagreement will be back as well, with Alexi and I covering everything we don't cover here on Imprint Companion. But more Zodiac Chronicle coming. And if I'm honest with our listeners right now, I've got most of the series completed.
Wow.
And it's just so hard right now to let go. We're only really 5 episodes away from the show being completed. So I've been a bit hesitant to release this last one. We're right in the Rick Marshall phase. It's a very complicated moment in the film. And I've been just kind of quietly devastated that it's going to end, if I'm really honest with you. And so, this is one of the strange feelings that you have. But you guys are going to hear all those episodes coming up, including one of the funnest conversations I think we've had on the show, which is Lexi and Cam joining me in the basement. And Travis Woods, my incredible mate, who you guys would know from Increment Vice.
Yeah.
Going long and deep, and maybe deeper than anyone else, in the final episode of the show. So in true Travis fashion, I can't wait for you guys to hear that. But thank you so much for listening to Imprint Companion. Get your freaking hands on this box set. Alexi and I will be back soon. Hi, this is Blake Howard, host and producer of One Heat Minute Productions podcast. We dive into the great and underappreciated cinematic works, often 1 minute or one scene at a time. Our crew of guests are some of the most wonderful filmmakers, writers, authors, and critics ever assembled. Our shows include One Heat Minute, Josie and the Podcats, All the President's Minutes, Increment Vice, and right now, Zodiac Chronicle. Check out oneheatminute.com or find us wherever you get your podcasts.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.